Dan. This is a week of almost tragedy and a week of pure jubilation. Only hours before our podcast today, the only time we could fit it in this week, I didn't have power. However, on the other hand, you got to go to Toronto to watch a Braves game, and being a on your way to a father kind of paid off, I hear.
It did. My wife and I went. She spoiled me rotten as a Atlanta Braves fan misplaced in upstate New York, or western New York, as we say up here. So we went to Toronto yesterday, and long story short, my wife, who's expecting, I had purchased a shirt that said, a future Braves fan with an arrow pointing to her stomach, which is growing day by day, with our first son. And so we're standing out in we had front row seats in left center field, and, we hadn't even been standing there about 2 minutes, and the bullpen coach, Eddie Perez, turns around and he says, "Hey, is this the baby's first game?" And we said, yeah. And so he turns around and he tosses up a baseball to us. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, we got our son's first ball. So a couple minutes go by, and Perez goes in to throw BP for the rest of the warm-up. And I look at Cassie and I said, "Where'd you do with the ball?" And she goes, "Oh, I put it in my bag. I thought maybe we could get another one." And I thought she's kind of being greedy, you know. But, no sooner had I said that, we turn around and, we're watching BP, and a relief pitcher, a guy named David Carpenter, turned around after catching a fly ball, and he says, "Oh, is this the first game for the baby?" And we said, "Yeah." And he says, "Is this your first one?" And we said, "Yeah." And he tosses us a ball and he says, "Good luck." So being the, sentimental lug that I am, I asked him if he would sign the baseball. And so I tossed down a pen and a ball and the ball, and he signed it and tossed it back up. So we got my son's first two baseballs, and we're probably going to, get a nice display. I kept score of the game, and we'll probably set it up somehow in a little trophy case kind of deal.
Very nice. Well, it's a very nice story, and it's had to be a heck of a time up there.
Oh yeah, we got to watch. They won in 10 innings. We got to watch two of my favorite players, Brian McCann and Evan Gattis, El Oso Blanco, hit back to back home runs, and then McCann hit a home run in the 10th to give them the lead.
Awesome. Well, welcome back to Throughway Puck, podcast number 8. We are on Twitter. You can follow us at Barrel of Sports, OEisen25, and you are DPRON1?
PRON1, yep, DPRON1.
Also, barrelofsports.blogspot.com, and you can find us on iTunes by searching Throughway Puck. We can head over to our hockey topics now that we've gotten baseball out of the way for the day.
Indeed.
Big news out of Detroit today. Not surprising to too many people. John Tortorella is out as the Rangers coach.
Yeah, and that is out of New York, not Detroit there, my friend.
I'll get to where I want to be.
My geographically challenged friend. Tortorella's out. Glenn Sather, the GM, quoted as saying, "Well, coaches all have a shelf life." And I think the entire hockey world saw this writing on the wall, that if they got knocked out early in the playoffs, especially the way they did, that he wasn't going to be around long.
I agree. I had reservations as to whether or not it would happen. They've built that team around his system. They've got it, especially with the moves that they made at the deadline, getting rid of Gabrick, bringing in your grinder guys, that are willing to do the hard work, block the shots, grind in the corners, and score goals that way. Granted, it hasn't worked for the goals, but that's what they had started to build the team around, and that's kind of what Tortorella preaches. So I was surprised that it happened so fast. At the same time, I'm in full belief that a lot of this has to do with Brad Richards there. I think they want to get him back in the lineup. I don't think that they want to write him off. I don't think they want to give him the big check and say, "Hey, here, go sign somewhere else and make a difference." But I don't think that they could do that with Tortorella in charge of that team still.
Well, I think they do want to get rid. I think this makes getting rid of Richards easier. And the reason that is because the reason he signed there in the first place was because of the coach. But also, I think the other reason they want to get rid of him isn't because it's too much of a salary now. It's this whole recapture the cap BS that they put in during the CBA negotiations. What it means is, if the way the CBA worked out now is, if he played all the way up until his last 2 years, let's say, and those last 2-3 years of his contract are complete bullcrap, and that are they're only $1 million a piece. So, if he only plays up until those last 2 years, even though there's only $2 million left, one for each year, they're going to get hit with a cap hit of over five, or even I want to say it was closer to $10 million that they're going to get hit with each year. And so, and you might see someone like Marian Hossa as well. Luongo might get bought out for that exact reason. You know, even if these guys get traded, then it splits between the two teams. So even if the Rangers traded Richards away, and then Richards retires with 2 years left on his contract, they still get hit for a certain amount of that contract. So if they get out of it now, they're free and clear from that recapture penalty.
I could definitely see it happening that way then. I have a hard time. I still think that part of it is that they would like to see him play. We'll see what they do decide to do going forward. It shall be interesting to see which way that team goes now. I don't think Tortorella is going to have much of a hard time landing a job. It may not be this spring here, but not too long down the line, you'll see him behind the bench again.
Do you see him going out to Vancouver, where the GM wants to have more truculence and tough guys? We saw them re-sign tough guy Tom Sestito just yesterday, I believe, or today. And so maybe he finds a landing spot out there?
He could find a spot there. I don't know. He's a big-name coach. I think he stays, if he can find one, I think he stays in the spotlight of the media market somewhere, one of the big-name teams. But a lot of them, other than the Rangers, aren't going to be looking for that. So he might have to go somewhere else where he isn't quite the star that he was in New York.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, to be able to go to Vancouver, we have to mention that Vancouver fired their coach, Lane Vigneault, this past week. And that one didn't really surprise too many people either.
That one didn't at all. The writing on the wall was there for that one. The difference there is they have to, quoted as saying that they need to make a change as far as the direction of the team goes. You kind of wonder where that goes from there, though, because they don't have a team built to grind it out. You would have to go kind of high-flying, but how far do they want to try and stretch that playing in the Western Conference? That's not the style that's played for most of the year out that way. It's more of an East Coast thing, it seems.
Yeah, and Vancouver, in my opinion, it's more a problem of the way the team is built than the way the coach coached the team. He didn't make the goalie controversy. Gillis did. He didn't give Keith Ballard and David Booth $4 or $5 million contracts, knowing that they're injury prone players. He didn't, just trade Cody Hodgson for Zach Cassian. So I don't understand why we fire a coach when it's, the guy buying the groceries is the one doing his job.
Yeah. Other coaching moves. There is talk of Lindy Ruff landing in Dallas. I did hear that a couple places over the week, course of the week here. And the big news is Patrick Waugh lands officially in Colorado.
He gets that job, and he also gets to be, I want to say it was like a vice president of player personnel.
Yep.
And the big news out of that one, Otto, was he said pretty clearly that the number one pick is in play, meaning it could be traded out. They could trade that number one pick and give up on Seth Jones.
I think right now they'd be crazy. I think it's probably a lot of talk to stir up and see if they can't land somebody else big somewhere. But as far as just trading him to trade him and get out of that top pick, I don't see it. There's too much. Those top three picks are very valuable this year, and Colorado needs something on the defensive end to help them out. One of the talks was Ryan Miller coming to Colorado, where they've already got two supposedly number one goalies, and that they don't need another guy there. I'm sure they could move one of them, but it's nothing that I've heard so far makes any sense on Colorado's end for that one for me to move out of that top pick there.
Well, I guess it's a matter of do they think that if they make this trade, if they make a trade for Miller and maybe a forward or whatever, do they think that they're 2-3 guys away from getting it, or are they still farther away where they need to add a big piece like Seth Jones, let him develop, and then add another couple pieces through, you know, as their prospects develop, and then go at somebody adding that final piece? You know, if they think they're close, which Wah and Sakic might think they are, because they do have a ton of talent up front, maybe they do.
There is, and that's the talk with bringing in, Drouin?
Yep.
That's the talk of bringing him in, is that they can afford to move one of those other guys from up front because they are so deep. I just don't see it. I think you got to build. I think they're more than a Miller trade away. I think if they bring Miller in, I don't know that he's around long enough to really put a cap on this and finish it off. I think he's got limited years left because of his workload in Buffalo. So I think his career ends up being shortened a little bit by that. And if you bring him in, then you've got a plan for another goalie X number of years down the road, whereas you'd rather have a guy there now that can do enough. Kind of like the talk was with Howard at points this year. Nobody knew that he was going to make a run like he has in the playoffs here. He was supposed to do enough, and it was supposed to get help from the team, whereas in the playoffs now, he's been the story, and the team has been doing just enough to get him wins.
Let's be real. It's not Miller's workload that's going to wear him down. It's getting run over and steam plowed by Milan Lucic that's going to end his career.
Well, that too. It's already put him on the downspin, but we've talked about that before, that a lot of that is the supporting cast, we'll call it, out in Buffalo for him.
Okay, if you're Team Canada, don't you just pick Lucic just for the fact that you know you're going to have to play the Americans at some time, and just have him steamroll Miller for just that one game?
Why not?
Just to get in his head.
Or skate at the net fast and spray some snow in his face. And I think it would have the same effect as running him over.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you want to go, we'll hit on NHL stuff right first here?
Yeah, we can start there. We can do a quick recap.
Recap of our picks from last round. Otto chose Pittsburgh over Ottawa, and that was correct. Otto had it in six games. I had Ottawa with the upset, and boy, was I wrong. They just, you know, I think the emotion of playing that first series, kind of they ran out of juice. After playing Montreal, and I think Pittsburgh got the wake-up call it needed, and that was all she wrote.
That Pittsburgh offense made the best goalie, or one of the best goalies in the playoffs, look like he was a sieve. They woke up, and even you could see the emotion that you're talking about, too. I sent out a tweet in Game 4 after Pittsburgh had scored I don't know which number goal it was, and I just said this series is over. You could see it on the face of the Ottawa players.
Oh, absolutely.
They looked dead. They looked disgusted. They didn't look like they even wanted to come out and play Game 5. They did, and it didn't really matter. Pittsburgh was rolling and Ottawa was beat down. And watch out for Pitt. If they can get anything out of their goaltending, I think they make a good run.
Pittsburgh's power play is just filthy. I mean, the fact that
units.
Their first power play unit's one thing, but then they go and their second unit has Jerome Iginla on it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many power play units? How many second? How many teams can say that, that's their second unit is built around Jerome Iginla?
Well, if you had a NFL-style All-Star game where your All-Star game was after the season, you would have half of Pittsburgh's roster on the Eastern All-Star team.
Yeah. When Neal, Malkin, and Crosby are all going, and Iginla is a secondary scorer, you know you've got problems.
Yeah, and when they're all producing, too.
Yeah. In the other series, Otto and I both went 0-for. We both were homers in that we picked the Rangers, and Boston just steamrolled them in this series. I mean, even the game that New York did win,
they shouldn't have won.
And Tuukka Rask had two giveaways that almost looked like he had checked out of the game mentally because Boston was controlling the game at that point.
It wasn't a pretty series either. That is probably a lot of what got Tortorella fired. New York was along the same lines. They just, the energy wasn't there. They weren't doing the things that they do to win hockey games. And they weren't scoring either. It took their power play until game four to score a goal. So you can't have that in the playoffs. We talked about that in the first round when Minnesota went 0-for the series against Chicago.
Yeah.
You can't win if you're not going to score power play goals.
Yeah, when the teams are so evenly matched and you're giving up those chances and not scoring on the power play, you're fighting an uphill battle.
And there's a difference, too, between not scoring on the power play and not getting opportunities. The Rangers were getting opportunities. It wasn't like they were only getting two power plays a game. They were getting three, four, five chances a game and not getting anything out of it. So it's not going to help you.
So to wrap up our points on that side, Otto gets 1 point for Pittsburgh's win, and I get nothing for the Rangers or Ottawa. So Otto gets that point. Otto in the Western Conference nailed LA in 7 over San Jose. He gets the full 3 points. And I got to admit, Otto, I fought hard against my eyes to watch this game against sleeping. Not just the game, but the series. And what I did see was one hell of a series.
Absolutely. I didn't get to watch much of it either. The game I wanted to watch was on a Saturday, and I was up getting ready for the wedding. So I didn't even get to watch that one. But from what I'd watched the first periods, parts of the second, and then late games. And these two teams were just willing to grind it out and both working like championship teams. People might call it another faltering year for San Jose, but at the same time, they weren't expected to win. And the fact that they did as well as they did, I think they turned a new leaf there. Logan Couture taking over as the leader of this team. I think they have a very bright future, and I think to lose to Los Angeles, as much as you don't want to lose, it's going to be a little bit easier to take than it would be in previous years.
Or getting lost or losing in the first round.
Right.
But to your point, Otto, you really didn't need to stay up and watch the third period because whoever scored first won every game.
You have a point. You do.
And to be honest, you already knew who was going to win because every team that was home won.
That if we had done this podcast yesterday and I would have picked, I think I was going to pick San Jose just strictly based on the idea of bucking the trend of the home team wins every game.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they didn't, and we'll
I'll take the point. Take the 3 points.
Three points. I'll take the, yes.
And the series that is finishing up tonight, just about to get underway in Chicago, is Chicago in Detroit, game 7 tonight. Chicago kind of was on the ropes there early in the series. They won the last two games to force game 7. They kind of looked like a team that was waiting for someone to take over for them and waiting for things to happen as opposed to going and getting it. And then in games 5 and 6, they decided that they were going to take advantage and take it to the Red Wings. And it was a completely different team, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. My problem with Chicago, they've turned into a team that looks like a team of superstars right now. They've had a couple instances where, you know, a guy gets hooked up a little bit, interfered with a little bit, things that in the playoffs you know aren't going to be called as a penalty. But as soon as they're touched, they stop and they look around for a call like they're expecting just to be given it. It drove me nuts in Game 6. I think I sent you a message about it at the time. It's not what you want to see. What you want to see is what Detroit did in the early games of the series, where they were making Chicago earn every bit of ice, and Chicago didn't want to take it or didn't want to earn it. They wanted it to be given to them. And Chicago has turned that around a little bit as of late in this series. But we'll see what happens tonight in Game 7. Home ice in Chicago, I think they're in good shape, but we'll see what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, part of me likes watching that, you know, that battle, that mental grind. If you're watching the series, anytime Taves has the puck or doesn't even have the puck, and him is on the ice, he's just getting blasted and cheap shot. Not necessarily cheap shot, but they're just getting a body on him, getting a stick on him, not letting his life be easy. And in the past, you've always heard Taves, you know, being called someone who is so composed and, you know, doesn't get rattled at all. He was visibly rattled in games 2, 3, and 4.
Three consecutive minor penalties in the second period. Not going to help your team.
But you could just tell he was upset, and the coach, Quenneville, was upset. But in games 5 and 6, you didn't see that. He just kept going and had the determination, like, I'm going to fight through this check. You can beat the heck out of me, but I'm still going to go to the net. And that's been the difference in my eyes.
Yeah. And they, like I said, they decided to do the work that they needed to do. And that is what has gotten them back in this series.
Yeah.
And it's what will win it for them, too. Jimmy Howard, I think, has to steal one tonight for Detroit to close out that series. I think Chicago's taken over the momentum. And as hard as it is to win 3 in a row, I think they get it done tonight.
So the winner of that game tonight, if Chicago wins, both of us will get a point because we picked Chicago in 5. But if Detroit wins, then both of us will go 0-for. So if Chicago wins, Otto will have 16 points and I would have 12. That is the highest you and I can get to at this moment in time. So we'll wrap up. We'll do our puck previews for the third round, the conference finals.
Yep. Starting in the East or the West here?
You tell me.
All right, we'll start in the East since there's only one scenario to run down there.
Okay, Coach.
All right. Starting in the East, Pittsburgh versus Boston. Boston was the 2 seed up until, you know, the last couple days of the season where they faltered off. So this it doesn't read as it, but it has the potential to be a 1-2 series. Boston has looked like that number 2 team in the East as of late, ever since about, what was it, 7 minutes left in the third period of Game 7 in the first round. They've been rolling pretty good. They're getting scoring from all over the ice, a lot of contributions from the third and fourth lines. That being said, though, as we discussed in the recap of the Pittsburgh series, Pittsburgh's offense is on a whole different level altogether. For this one, I give 7 pucks to Pittsburgh's offense and 3 pucks to Boston's offense. On the defensive end, I'm giving 6 pucks to Boston and 4 to Pittsburgh. I think Boston has more of the ability to shut down Pittsburgh's a guy or two on Pittsburgh's lineup that they want to focus on. I think they can do that. Then the big difference in this one comes in goal. Marc-Andre Fleury still hasn't started since being pulled. Thomas Volkoon has played but has not impressed me by any means. And Ottawa did not provide that much skill against him from the way the games were played. Tuukka Rask is proving himself again this year on this run. So I went 8 pucks to 2 for goaltending in this series. Ooh. Gives me a total of 17 pucks to 13 pucks for Boston.
Otto or Oliver.
Don't yell at me. 17-13 for Boston. I'm teetering on the edge with this one as far as my pick itself goes. I think Pittsburgh's special teams are going to play an absolutely huge role in this one, as well as if they can get any goaltending that's unexpected. I think that makes a big swing. In this one, I'm actually going to take Pittsburgh in six games, despite my pucks saying otherwise.
So, Oliver, I'm gonna end up with one dog instead of two. I don't even know what he's barking at.
He doesn't agree with my picks.
He doesn't like your picks. He thinks Marc-Andre Fleury is going to win the series.
All right.
So I'm sorry, you had Pittsburgh in six.
Pittsburgh in six.
Well, I care to disagree with you, sir. I broke it down. I had Pittsburgh getting six pucks on the offensive side. I mean, what can you say? You got Crosby, Malkin, Neal, Kunitz, Dupuis, Aginla, Suter,
Cook,
Kennedy. I mean, there's just a lot of guys that put the puck in the net, and they slot in their lineup really nicely.
Yes.
But that being said, you know, they're only getting six pucks versus Boston, because Boston's got some power of their own.
Yeah, and they've come to life.
And they've come to life. You know, their first line has really started to pick up with Marchand, Sagan, and Bergeron. You got Lucic, Horton, and Krejci. Krejci's up in the top leaders of points. You know, he's having a really underrated playoffs, in my opinion. But their fourth line, I mean, forget their third line. Their fourth line of Kelly, or Campbell, Paille, and Thornton has been unreal. I mean, Paille and Campbell have created a lot of chances, not only 5-on-5, but shorthanded. So, you know, they're going to get four pucks against Pittsburgh because their firepower is just unreal.
Yeah.
But defensively, I'm going to give Boston six pucks against Pittsburgh for four, just because you get Zdeno Chara back there. Their defensive system that Claude Julien puts out as a team is a real tough defense to break through. And like I said, their fourth line plays a really good defensive style for them, and their penalty kill is outstanding. And then in the goaltending category, I think we do see Marc-Andre Fleury this series. I think at least one game Vokoun's going to get lit up. So I'm going to give Boston six pucks. Tuukka Rask has been, in my opinion, the most consistent goaltender of the playoffs. Even Jonathan Quick has kind of had a rough start there. But I think Tuukka Rask is going to be the difference in this series. So I got 16 pucks for Boston, 14 for Pittsburgh, and I'm going to take Boston in six.
So we both expect that series to end in six. Different ways, of course, but see where that goes. They will start in Pittsburgh this weekend, I would presume.
I believe they're starting on Saturday. No, Thursday?
Probably. I would say Friday. I would assume there's one day off.
I thought it came out. I'll have to look while you're doing your Western round. Why don't you do the possibility of L.A. and Chicago? And I'll look.
All right. I'm going to say that Chicago and Los Angeles is definitely my dream series here. I would love to watch these two teams play. Sort of contrasting styles, but at the same time, they can both play the same way. They both have offensive weapons that are pretty good. They've both got solid goaltending. Both play a real good team game for the most part. When I break it down, I think I have to base this going on the way Chicago has played offensively so far in the playoffs. They haven't been overly impressive. They've scored some goals when they've needed to, but they haven't gone over the top. I split the pucks between the two 5-5. Defensively, this is where it gets more into the team game. Both teams are back working in their own zones, doing what needs to be done. So I split the pucks there as well. The only difference I saw in this one, as far as I'm concerned, I gave 6 pucks to Los Angeles and 4 to Chicago for goaltending. I think Jonathan Quick has found his groove, and I think they're going to be in good shape as far as protecting the goal goes. Total, that gives me 16 pucks for Los Angeles, 14 for Chicago. I agree with that, and I'm going to go LA in 6 games.
LA in 6. Just to cap off the Pittsburgh-Boston series, that's going to start Saturday at 8 o'clock. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, June 1st. LA-Chicago, I think it is everybody's dream series. The team defensive style of LA versus Chicago's get-up-and-go system and their firepower up top. I think that it's going to be a great series if it goes. I've got Chicago getting 6 pucks offensively. You know, that, like we said with Pittsburgh, they can match their firepower of Taves, Kane, Sharp, Hosta, even now Shaw and Bickle are getting into the act. And if those secondary scorers are really firing for the Hawks, then they're a pretty dangerous team. Defensively, though, that's where I see a big difference. LA's defense not only is providing some offense in the form of Voyanov and Doughty, but they play a real tough system. They added Robin Regier. Drew Doughty's playing like Drew Doughty did last year in the playoffs. They got Matt Green back so that they're not playing a guy like Keaton Ellerbe. So they're pretty deep defensively, and they're healthy on the back end. So I'm giving LA 7 pucks against Chicago's 3. And goal, I mean, Jonathan Quick is back to being Jonathan Quick, whereas Chicago's got Corey Crawford. Not that Crawford's been the reason that they've lost any of their games, but he's not stood on his head like Jonathan Quick has been. And I think mentally Quick has an edge on the Chicago forwards. So that gives me 17 pucks for LA, 13 for Chicago. I'm going to say LA in 6.
I found myself oddly rooting for LA in this one, and just along the playoffs here, and I don't know why. No connection to it or anything. They're just a fun team.
American captain, American hero Dustin Brown. It's good New York. They got Jonathan Quick. Sorry, that's a terrible Pierre Maguire impression.
We'll take it, though.
Another American hero in Jonathan Quick. No.
They're just fun to watch. I like their style. They're good. I mean, I'm going to root. I don't even know who I want to root for in this one. I like watching Chicago play, too. They've got a little more of the superstar swagger. And they're fun to watch as well. You know, they go out and they gun it down if they have to, or they drop back and play it defensively if they have to. And, well, who doesn't love a good mullet, too? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think that LA is fun to watch because they've always had the mentality of we're going to go out and make something happen, whereas Chicago has played that like that the last couple games. But early in the playoffs, they were not playing that way. They were waiting for things to happen to them.
And did you hear the interview? I think it was on Merrick versus Wyshynski the other day, where they had talked to somebody on LA. They were talking about how hard it is to get up for every game this year. They did it last year, yes, but they just said, you know, some nights you don't have it. But I tell you what, when that team brings it, they are just. They're very talented, and they're just incredible to watch them.
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't hear or see that one.
That might have been Hockey Today then. I don't know. I listened to that one. That one's so biased. It's ridiculous. They're based out of Toronto. Sportsnet there. And the home team is obviously the Maple Leafs, and anything else is irrelevant. But they talk hockey, so I'll listen to it.
Yes, we are so strapped to listen to hockey talk. Final series possible. The other option is L.A. versus Detroit. If Detroit wins tonight, they will head to L.A. And open up. My guess is probably on Sunday night. Maybe they'll open it up on Saturday, like a matinee kind of thing. What do you see in the? Or I'll do this one actually. I'll start up with here. Offensively, I think I see them pretty even. I gave them both five pucks. I think that that Detroit's got some depth. Offensively, they've gotten scoring from their top three lines. You know, in LA, they don't have a ton of scoring, but they have enough to get by. Defensively, again, this is where it's a big mismatch in LA's favor. 7 pucks to 3 for LA. Detroit, I really don't know how they're shutting down some of the players they're shutting down. I mean, I guess Jonathan Erickson and Nicholas Cronwall are playing above their heads, but you know, you look at their defense and you go, who are these guys? Yeah. So I give 7 pucks to LA on that one. 6 pucks going to LA. Jonathan Quick over Jimmy Howard, mostly because Quick's won it before and he's just been lights out this last round and a half. So that gives me 18 pucks for the Kings and 12 pucks for Detroit, having me pick L.A. in 5.
All right. I agree with you. I have it picked a little bit tighter than you do. I have L.A. offensively 6 pucks to 4. I think their depth of scoring is a little bit deeper than what Detroit has. They get it from a couple more lines. Defensively, I think it has a lot to do with the system. I think Detroit just has names in there, and you might not recognize them. But the guys that are there do what they're asked to do, and it works. So I went even with the pucks there, 5 and 5. I wanted to give Quick the advantage in this series for goaltending. But what Jimmy Howard has done for this Detroit team has been equally impressive to me. He's carried them when they've needed him to play in the biggest moments. So I split the pucks there too. Gives me 16-14 total, and I'm going to take the Kings in 6 games.
Kings in 6. Okay, I don't know what is going into my dog.
He likes the Red Wings. Ship him off to Bo.
Yep, he's upset at every time you pick Otto. He's upset.
I'm seeing this.
So down to the AHL, we're into the conference finals as well. We had made our picks through our blog on barrelofsports.blogspot.com. Quick pick, just to review what we picked for this conference final round. We had Jay text in his picks. He says that Syracuse is going to win in 5 over the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, who have made a little bit of a run here. They came all the way back from a 3-0 deficit, won 4 games in a row against the Providence Bruins. Only the fourth team in AHL history to do so. But Jay says Syracuse is going to knock him out this time in 5. He's just going to be a tight scoring series. I agree with him. I think it's going to be a tight scoring series. I think Syracuse gets it done in 5. For that to happen, they need to win the next 3 games because the series is tied 1-1. You, my friend, pick Syracuse in 6. And for some odd reason, you happen to be the pick connoisseur of the AHL playoffs. So, you'll probably end up with the 3 points.
I don't know that they can shut. I think Wilkes-Barre's on a run right now, and I don't know as much as Syracuse is, too. I think it just takes them a little bit longer than one loss.
Could be.
That's the only reason I went 6 there.
Yeah. Just quick point out, You know, you think about the injuries that the Boston Bruins had on their blue line, Ferentz, Seidenberg, I think Boychuk maybe, or McQuaid, one of those two. Where do you think those three defensemen, Torrey Krug and Borkowski, came from? They came from Providence. So while the run was impressive for Wilkes-Barre to come back, you have to keep in mind that two of their Providence's top two defensemen were gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of those things about the AHL playoffs that you can really get affected by your parent club's injury.
Yeah. And when we talked to Jay about the Binghamton Senators, it's one of the reasons he was hoping that the Ottawa Senators would not succeed as much as they did, so that they could have the extra help there.
Indeed. And then in the West, Jay picked Grand Rapids, who defeated Toronto in six games to earn a conference final berth. He's going to pick Grand Rapids in six over the Oklahoma City Barons, who you and I have both picked. I'm taking Oklahoma in six games. You're taking them in five. It'll be interesting to see how Oklahoma City responds after the tragic event. You know, the tornado came through and wiped out more Oklahoma, which is less than 20 minutes away from the arena that they play in. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of counting on that they rally around, we got to win for this city kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot like Boston has done with the Boston Strong concept there after the marathon bombings.
So to recap our AHL points, Otto took a commanding three-point lead. He's got 12 points to Jay and I, who are tied for not with 9 points apiece. And the big one was Wilkes-Barre coming back against Providence. So we weren't too good on our picks this last round, so maybe we can fix that for this conference final round.
Yep, you and I are same picks. Jay picks Grand Rapids over Oklahoma. That's the only difference there. But since we have all different games, there is some room to move there for all of us.
Absolutely. On a personal note, my father's actually heading out to Oklahoma here next week for umpiring, fast pitch softball. So he's kind of hoping that that Oklahoma and Syracuse win it, because we've got some friends in Syracuse that, you know, Syracuse is only an hour drive down the thruway. So he can hop on the thruway, head down to Syracuse, get there for possible what would be games maybe one and two. And then when he's out in Oklahoma, he would drive over.
See him down there,
hopefully
too.
Get to see it down there, which is pretty cool, you know. One of the cool things about being an off-ice official, you got that league pass to do stuff like that. So that's what he's hoping for. So,
with good reason.
Absolutely. I think that's about it for me, sir.
I agree with that. We didn't have a whole lot this week. Let's see, next week we will just be starting the NHL. AHL will be halfway through or so, I would think. Is there only 1-1 now?
Yeah.
So, we will have to work this weekend, early next week, and come up with some actual topics that we can hit on again. And do one of those podcasts and just kind of have a quick hit on the playoffs. And maybe we'll have some new news on the AHL coming to Utica. The state did say that Utica will be getting $2 million in funding to renovate the Odd. Always a promising sign. Neither side, either the investor group here or Vancouver's ownership, has mentioned too much lately, so everybody around here takes that as a good sign as well. The case of silence being a good thing in terms of maybe a team possibly coming. So maybe by the next week we'll have some news on that one.
Yeah, random last thought. We talked about it at the start of the show. Do you think maybe Lindy Ruff goes to New York instead of Dallas?
I don't know that he's a guy for the spotlight. Yes, he was a big deal in Buffalo, but that's because Buffalo has very strong roots there as far as hockey goes. If he goes to the Rangers, he's a national spotlight week in and week out. Dallas just seems like the fit, at least to me, for Lindy. He's going into a team that's not expecting to win now. They've got talent there, though. It's not like they're going to be a bottom feeder. And it just seems more like the ideal situation for him to walk into and help build a team a little bit, as opposed to walking into New York where spotlight's on from the day you accept the job, or you're even in the talks for the job, and they're expecting a cup within a couple of years based on that roster that they have.
See, I think he's built more for New York, the Rangers, the way they've set up their team. I mean, think about it. When was he at his best? When he had a great goaltender, Hasek, Miller, and then one or two scorers, and the rest of the team that just worked their tails off. What does New York do? You know, I think he's got Lund. They got Lundqvist there. They got Nash. Maybe Richards. Who knows if they keep him?
Then you go to Callahan and roll guys like that. And it's sad to call Callahan a roll guy. He's really not. He's the captain of the team, but
he's a second liner. I mean, he's a second line, top six scorer, top six winger.
The way you say that, it's definitely true there too.
So,
I have no doubt that he'll be coaching again, though, by the time the next season rolls around.
Yeah, he'll break camp with somebody. Yeah, that was just kind of in my head as I was looking over some of the notes here and. Yeah. Calling it a day. Look at me, sounding official with a paper ruffle.
A notepad, I like it.
Paper ruffle.
Didn't print mine today.
So that'll do it here for Through a Puck, Episode 8. Check us out on iTunes, Through a Puck. If you check anything out on Twitter, hashtag it, Through a Puck. And... barrelofsports.blogspot.com for pick updates, and maybe we'll throw up a blog post here anytime.
Maybe. We keep saying it.
I might even put up one on the Braves again here. So if you are a quasi Braves fan / hockey fan, I am your guy.
Patrick Corbin, by the way, still unbeaten in his starts. We had discussed him a few times.
We have, and I picked him up on a couple of my fantasy teams.
Not a bad choice.
Not a bad choice at all.
All right. Well, from New York Mills for me and Amherst for Dan, we will talk to you all again next week.
Go Hawks.